Welcome back to Elevation Trail and the Foot Feather Show. Today I have with us a returning guest who may end up being a permanent fixture here at Elevation Trail if I can coax him into it. And I know he's used to making tons of money as a university professor. But, so he'll be used to making the money that I'm willing to offer to have him be on our show more often. Zero. But anyway, Gary David's with us here today, and we're going to further discuss some of the conclusions from his survey that he put together on the demographics of ultra running. The Bentley University Ultra Running Project. Is that correct, Gary?
Yes.
Burps. Yeah, I like it. So welcome back to the show again today.
Thank you much.
Yeah, and we have you have some pretty big news in terms of running yourself, right? You just finished your first 50-miler.
Yeah, I guess it's big news. It was the TARC, the Trail Animals Running Club out here in Massachusetts, New England, had their 100-mile run, and in conjunction with that, they had a 50-mile run, and you know, it was a 25-mile loop course, so two loops for us, four loops for everyone else. And it was just last Friday starting at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
And, you know, heading through the night for the 50-milers and pretty epic conditions. People want to go onto Facebook and check out the TARC 100 page, you can see some of the video of the extreme mud and wetness that we had to experience through that race, given that this has been so far the fourth wettest June on record, and we're only halfway through it, or just a little bit over halfway through it. And we've had about almost 9 inches of rain so far in June in the Boston area. And the average amount of rain for all of June is around 2.5 inches.
Oh, man. So you're on target for like 18 inches of rain this month?
One can only hope. And when things are dry, parts of that course are wet. Yeah. And so when things are wet, they are really wet. And it was, as people can go again and online and check out some accounts and check out some of the video, it was pretty tough sledding, and you know, both being running at night, almost exclusively at night for the 50 milers, and for the 100 mile people, you know, having to go through the terrain they had to, but was billed as a very, beginner 100 friendly race.
Yeah.
Beginner 50 friendly race in terms of the terrain not being very difficult, and it wasn't, although everything gets a little bit difficult when you run that long. What the conditions were made up for that in spades. And so it ended up being a pretty interesting evening.
Yeah. I mean, well, you and I talked about that, like for your first 50, I know you were kind of a little bit pushed into it because of scheduling conflict with your initial, plans to do the Cayuga 50 miler.
Right.
The previous week you had ended up having to run this one as a second choice, but you know, running it at night, plus it rained all flipping week. And, you know, so I can only imagine. I mean, you're not used to running at night, are you?
No. I'm used to running in the dark, but usually it's like at 4:30 a.m. And
on the roads probably, too.
On your the roads, yeah. You know, I've run some on the trails in the dark, but not too much. But the biggest challenge for me, I mean, you know, the mud was the mud, and you just kind of deal with that. And actually, my honest opinion was, because so much of the course was runnable, it helped to force walks.
Yeah.
And so there are just parts where you weren't running. You were walking through it because you're either in ankle deep mud or you're in thigh deep water. And it was basically portaging through these streams, and you didn't know you couldn't see obviously the bottom because it was all mucky and muddy. So you didn't know if there was roots or rocks or what was going on. So I was being pretty cautious through there. So it wasn't so bad. But the fact that I was finishing the race, it took me 9 hours and 17 minutes. The fact that I was finishing about the time I usually get up in the mornings, you know, 4:17 a.m.
Yeah.
That was, and I had been up for 22 hours, you know, because I had to actually do some teaching that morning at my school. Yeah, that was the hardest part, was just the fact that I was just tired.
Yeah.
You know, I was just kind of physically tired, not just from running 50 miles, but also being up for 22 hours. And I'm old, and I'm not used to that.
I know. It's the funny enough, that is the almost the exact time I finished Zion 100 back in the end of April, because we started, I think, at 6 a.m. and I finished at 4:24 or something like that.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, you're finishing. It's like, what the hell, man? Should I be going to bed or drinking coffee or, you know, throwing up on the finish line?
I kind of laid down on the grass as soon as I crossed the finish line. And I was advised by the race director. He's like, could you lay down away from the finish line? Because people are going to be finishing here. And I just said, I'll roll that way when people show up. You know,
I know. It's so anticlimactic, too. It's like you finish this huge accomplishment of a race. And it's like, hey, I'm done. You know, is anybody here?
Yeah, there was not really anybody there. And there were no finishing medals. And there were no prizes. And, you know, for 100, if you finish 100, you could actually buy a belt buckle. You didn't get a belt buckle. You bought a belt buckle.
Yeah.
And the thing that really – I mean, this was an old school down-home event. And it only cost $60 to enter.
Not bad.
And I don't know if you can find many 100-mile races for $60.
Nope.
It was – the people, you know, the Josh Gatzman and Bob Crowley and Chris Martin, the course manager, they did an unbelievable job in clearing poison ivy and making sure that the aid stations were well stocked and making sure that the course was well marked, because there was about a bazillion turns because it was a very tight area in the town of Weston. And it was actually done in conjunction with, I believe it was Weston's 300th anniversary of being a town.
Wow.
So welcome to New England.
Yeah.
And they did a heck of a job. And for $60, everything you got, and the vibe was just unbelievable, positive, you know, no attitude. Again, if you go back to one of our earlier podcasts about, you know, the douche scale, this was way on the left of the douche scale. Not a very non-douchey race. Almost, yeah. You know, non-existent douchiness at this race. And it was just a really good time. In quotation fingers, I wouldn't say it was fun. My idea of fun usually doesn't involve, you know, running at 2 a.m, but it was a very positive experience to have in many ways. And they did a tremendous job with it. And it was people traveled from around the country to come to this. And everyone who did said that they would come back, even those who dropped out. And the dropout rate was actually pretty high.
Pretty high? What was it? I know it was off the hook, man.
Well, for the 50, I've just got the numbers here. For the 50, there were 113 actual starters. 66 finished. That's 58% finished.
Not bad.
Only 54 finished in a 12-hour cutoff, and that's 48%.
Yeah. And you, what was your place?
7th.
Rock on, man.
7th,
first 50-miler at night after traveling across the country.
Yeah, well, yeah. That was
all week.
I was out in Palm Desert, California for a conference from Sunday till Wednesday. So I was at 100-degree heat out there at a conference, then flew back Wednesday night, got back home in my bed physically about 3:30 a.m. Thursday morning, got up at around 6 or 7, you know, did the family kid thing all day, and then had to work Friday morning for 3.5 hours, and then went and ran 100. Or 50, I should say.
Oh,
so, yeah, probably not the best taper plan in the world, but, you know, is what it is. For the 100, we had 156 starters and 65 finishers, so only 42% finished.
Oh, man, that's still pretty impressive with those conditions, too.
Oh, unbelievably. Unbelievably impressive.
Yeah, especially on a 25-mile loop course where you're running by the finish line and your car is sitting there at the, you know, in the parking lot, and you're like, God, I could get in my car right now and turn the heat on.
Well, quite literally, you ran by your car. You were no further than a couple miles from your car at any time in the race, probably.
Yeah.
So at any point, you know, in terms of dropping out and getting back to the finish line, you could be, you know, safely. Very easy.
Yeah.
Very easy.
Yeah, that's bad news for me. I need races like, you know, the Bear 100, where you're basically in another state away from your car by close to the finish. Otherwise, if it's too easy for me to drop, I'll be like, you know, I'll just go over there and drop out. It's not just a race. What the hell?
Right. Especially, again, in the dark, in the mud. You know, it's pretty demoralizing conditions for a lot of people. And it But I think that that just speaks to, again, the vibe of it, that, you know, reading some of the accounts that I've been reading through, some of the online blog accounts that people have been putting up of the race.
Yeah.
And just really these kind of emotional, heartfelt sentiments about how appreciative they were for everyone out there. And these are people, some of whom didn't finish, right?
Yeah.
And they, one guy, read his, I think I sent you the link, he got pulled after 95 miles because he didn't make the cutoff at the final aid station.
No.
God. Yeah.
I don't know. I think as a race director, I probably would have had to let that dude slip by.
Yeah. I, you know, it's an interesting call. And he was, from his blog post about it, just, you know what? Yeah, that's okay.
That's okay. It's the rule, man. You know,
that's okay. And, you know, this is where we go from what's more important. Is it the outcome or is it the experience? And for so many people who are outcome motivated, that they want to tell others they did this thing and they want to have the buckle and they want to hang it on the wall and they want to wear the jacket, mm-hmm. you know, around when they get the kids from school, right? To show the world that, you know, that's fine. Not judging that, but that's one motivation. Yeah. The other one is the experience. And the, not just the experience that one gets personally from it, but the one that gets created in communion with others, okay? And, you know, without getting too dramatic about it, this idea of, you know, of a revival, of a salvation that people are experiencing by coming together with like-minded others and in conjunction with that really elevating themselves above themselves. And I think that you get that sense in some of these sentiments that have been published from both volunteers out there and also from participants. And one of the questions I know we were talking about before we started recording is, you know, what is fueling the growth of the sport? And I think one of the factors, I don't think we can reduce it to one factor, but I think one of the factors is that this connection with others that is elusive in modern day society. And this is me as a sociologist speaking mm-hmm. with my biases, that the idea of I am out there with people that I don't know, that I nevertheless feel communion with and I'm able to connect with and I'm able to get this sense of connection and community that is elusive in other parts of my life. And that resonated throughout everything I've read on it. Now during the race, I ran mostly by myself, you know?
Yeah.
I literally 90% of the race, I was solo. And that's fine with me because I usually run alone anyway. But I think that it would have been interesting to have experienced that more directly. And I think next year I'm probably going to volunteer for this race mm-hmm. And just to kind of get that side of it.
Yeah.
You know, get that sense of what goes on at the aid stations and how people are getting that togetherness and how that manifests itself in the course of doing the race.
Yeah. No, it is nice to be on that side. I mean, not only what I end up finding, and this goes along with like crewing or pacing or volunteering at a race, all kind of fit into this same little pocket with me, is you end up having a great time yourself. You know, and it,
right.
I mean, I have a blast crewing and pacing at races and helping other runners out at races. It's almost, I mean, I've often had more fun doing that than I have like running in the thing myself. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see a whole different side of it when you're volunteering at these races. And I know you know all the background stuff in races anyway, putting on
right.
your own duathlon. So, I mean, but I think it'll be fun for you at one particular race to be a participant this year and then volunteer next year. And I think, you know, next year, hopefully it'll be nice too.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I think that another thing, you know, I think about what images struck me about that experience. And one of the images that struck me about the experience was when I finished. And, you know, again, no one's there really. You know, a few people are there timing it and they're like, yeah, good job. And that's all nice. And, you know, of course, my legs are kind of trashed. I had to kind of suck it up over the last 5 miles or so because I saw a headlight coming up on me.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, oh, hell no, you're not passing me.
Not now.
Not now. And, you know, Google goes back to that thing of, well, why didn't you wait for the guy and have that spirit of communion? And I'm thinking, no, he's not passing. Screw that. And so I saw this headlight coming. I found another gear and a half. It was pretty fun. But I finished and I'm a wreck. And people I don't know are trying to help get me food and trying to help get me things. And I kept thinking to myself, why are they helping me? I mean, who am I to be helped like this? I'm nobody. I'm just another runner who just finished, and that's cool. But they were, I was being treated as if I was the most important person in the world at that time, and my needs mattered completely.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was just kind of a weird, surreal kind of experience, because especially when, you know, you're a parent and usually your needs come somewhere, you know, after the dogs in terms of, you know, fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And here you are being catered to completely.
Oh, I know.
You know, what do you need?
How did you respond to that? Were you like, you know, did you embrace it? Were like, yeah, go get me a sandwich and some drink? Or were you like, no, I'm okay. Don't worry about it. I'll go get my own stuff.
Well, I would have liked to have gotten my own stuff if that was physically possible. But again, my legs are hurting so bad. Once you stop,
yeah,
right, trying to start again, yeah, good luck with that. I mean, I'm not talking about like you're in an aid station, you have to start running again. I mean, once you know the race is over,
mm-hmm,
I think your brain goes into a different mode.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you've outrun the lion.
Yep.
And all that stuff that's been shut off mentally in terms of the inhibitors are now flooding back in. And you're like, okay, you're done. You're not moving again. And I really was having a hard time hobble around. And I had to take the assistance. I thought it was nice, and, you know, to have people. And again, let's go back to the volunteers. And there was a whole fleet of volunteers there to help out. And for an inaugural event, I think pretty much it came off without a hitch. And it was really cool to be a part of, you know, and I think that's part of the thing that people are looking for. They want to be a part of something, right? And
then
this is being a part of something that allows them to redefine what they think their limits are, or what they've been told their limits are, and to kind of do some, you know, or ordinary people doing extraordinary things.
Yeah, especially under those conditions. That's a huge accomplishment. So congrats on that. And
thank you.
Yeah, so this week has been a week of first for guests, and we had Tan on.
I thought you were going to tell us something about yourself that was personal.
No, never.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have anything going on in my life that's interesting, really. But anyway, we had Tan on, who just ran his first 100, and it was like you two are kind of like night and day. I mean, you're kind of like fired up about it, you know, and, you know, like we've discussed, you know, aside from the show, you're interested in doing more 50s, you know,
yeah,
and doing them under better, you know, circumstances during the day would be nice, you know.
That would be nice.
Not a rainstorm, not traveling across country and so forth.
That'd be nice, too.
Tan, on the other hand, is just, you know, I asked him if he had even looked at his belt buckle yet that he earned at San Diego 100, and he's like, I picked it up and moved it once, you know, and it's like, I don't even want to look at it.
Why do you think that is? I listened to him. I listened to his podcast with you, and I was just thinking, why is that? Why is there such an aversion to that buckle?
I don't know, and I don't even know why he ran the thing, you know, and I've asked him. You know, we're friends too, you know, outside of just doing the show, but I've asked him, you know, what are your plans? He has no plans to run. And I don't mean hundreds. I mean, like, he doesn't even want to put his running shoes on. So I don't know. And all through the training, he was just, it sounded like he just really wasn't, I didn't know if he was just being humble, like, oh, you know, training's going okay. And, you know, I'm probably not going to do that well anyway. It's no big deal. And, you know, he was just like really kind of seemed negative almost, which is the, you know, that's like a death slap to you when you're going into 100. You have to, you know, go in with a positive attitude. And he, all through training, it just didn't seem like he was wanting to even run the race. And, you know, so I'm not surprised actually that he comes away from it saying, you know, I'll never do it again. But it is a little surprising that he's just like, you know, it's not fired up a little bit to go back and do a shorter event maybe.
Well, this raises – I mean, I don't mean to imply Tan at this point, but I think it raises an interesting question about early in ultra marathoning. Did the people who got involved in that come to the realization that that's who they are, right? This is who I am. This is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And doing the ultra marathon is just a fulfillment of that, you know, sense of self. This is who I am. Therefore, this is what I do. And it's not a question of why I'm doing it. The why I do is because it's who I am and it's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the curiosity seekers or what I call the buckle listers, the people who want to try it out.
Yeah.
And I think that the idea of trying it out, and I came across a few people on the trail like this, I just did a couple of marathons, so I figured I'd give this a try. And I think that, quite literally, right? I think that's a very different orientation to the activity, of saying, I want to try it out and see if I like it, like you're trying out, spinach or cauliflower or, whatever, yeah. Brussels sprouts versus, I know I will like it because I identify with it. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think that you were seeing possibly, and going back to the demographics paper, some of these elements mixing together in these races, the people who are trying it out to see what it's all about and the people who know that this is what they're meant to do to them. And yeah. No matter how hard, how awful, or whether they don't finish, it still resonates with them as an affirmation, as a fulfillment of that identity.
Yeah, and it's also – it goes back to the social media aspect of it too, like we discussed with like Facebook and Twitter and things like that and blogs and whatnot. And there are – the vast majority of these people that are doing this have – I think that they have this like look at me kind of mentality sometimes. And that was actually – I read an article in like Runner's World or something like, 10 years ago, why people get into running. And – there was like, the 7 reasons why people get into running, and one of them was the look at me point.
Sure.
And it's, and I'm guilty of that too sometimes, where you put your training out there. It's like, hey, check out what I did. Like yesterday I wrote, hey, we went up and over Hope Pass, did a double crossing. Check it out, man. It was really hard. Not many people are doing this, and it's like, look at me, and the other one is the copycat syndrome of, you see your friend on Facebook who just did something kind of cool, ran a 50 miler, and he has like 50 comments that say, God, you're awesome. I can't believe you did that. So inspiring. And you see that your friend getting all those accolades, and you're like, I wouldn't mind doing that too.
Sure.
I might try that. I think that leads a lot of people to go into these ill-prepared, and mentally and physically. I mean, I was just looking just casually at races, like comparing two of the two big races, Western States and Leadville. One you have to qualify for, and it's very difficult to get into in terms of the lottery and whatnot, and in qualifying. And the other one is just a free-for-all. Anybody can run it. If you're over 18 years old, you just send them your money, and that's Leadville. And, even if you're under 18, all you have to do is, forge one of your folks' names on, the waiver. And so it's wide open. And then you look at the drop rates. Leadville last year, 800 people started the race, 360 finished. That's 45% of the people finished that race. And, the weather was perfect, basically.
Right.
There was no excuse. And then you look at Western States, and I don't have it up in front of me right now, but it's, up in the high, mid to high 80s, I think, percentage-wise of finishers. I mean, it was like almost everybody finished unless you were, had a bad injury. So it just kind of goes to show that, a lot of people are trying these things out, like a Leadville, and it's, they're not doing so well. But, regardless of that, where are we going with
Well, I think that, there's this point about the stepwise progression approach, which is, and you think about personality types, and I'm not like a big fan of, Myers-Briggs tests and all this, but personality types, the conservative stepwise approach, which is totally me, of, okay, I've done these kinds of endurance events. I've done a couple 50Ks. Now I'm going to try a 50 miler, mm-hmm. And we've joked about before that I have no interest in doing 100, but if I was interested in doing 100, my progression would be, okay, I'm going to do a couple 50 milers and I'm going to go move up to the next distance. I'm going to progress. And then you have the other kind of approach one could take, which is a total, Las Vegas gambler approach of, hey, let's just give it a go and see what happens. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And which is totally not – which I have a hard time understanding because it's not my personality type in terms of how I approach things. I'm very, methodical in how I approach my racing and training versus other people who might, even at Boston Marathon, I'm going to jump in and run Bandit and, just because I want to do it and, no training whatsoever. And so I think that for race directors, especially at the 100-mile distance, this becomes a little bit of a conundrum because especially on races that go over great distances. You know, if someone at the TARC 100 gets a medical, mm-hmm. it's very easy to get them out.
Yeah.
Right? Very simple. If you're doing something like, you know, Zion or I don't know what, pick your race.
Hard Rock, yeah.
Hard Rock. Well, I mean, Hard Rock you have to qualify for, I believe, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, or Leadville. I mean, Leadville, if you get stuck up on Hope Pass, you were there last year with your runner, and you had to carry her down.
So for the race director now, I think race directors are going to have to think about how do we kind of for the managing of the safety of the runners and also the liability of the event. I know you sign a waiver and all that kind of stuff, but at the same time, you know, if someone is in trouble and you don't have the resources to get them out of trouble, even though they signed a waiver, you're still probably on the hook in some way. And so I think that as more people come in who are kind of taking this, let's give it a go approach, it's going to really not only change the dynamics on the trail to some extent, but also it's going to make it more difficult to manage the safety of the race. Because if you're out there as a trained person, we've had this conversation before, you're out there as a trained person and you come across somebody who's just doing it, you know, for their first time without any proper preparation. Okay, are you supposed to give up your race now to help them out when they're the knucklehead who didn't, you know, do what they needed to do to get, you know, themselves together? You know, it was going to raise some interesting questions of those dynamics.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, going back to the why we do this too, and, you know, in the progression and, you know, taking the time to build up to certain races, I think you and I share similar personalities in that regard. I mean, it took me quite a while to build up to want to do 100. And I mean, mostly it was because I was concerned of the not only just finishing, but the outcome, actually. And I'm a little
right.
– you and I are both, I think, a little more competitive. It's like you saw the headlight coming up behind you.
Yeah.
And it's like all of a sudden, hey, I can run, you know, fast.
Right.
You know? And that's kind of what my concern was when – before I did the Bear 100, I spent, you know, years building up to it where I have – you know, I know athletes that are like – I've run four half marathons and I think I'm going to try a 50 miler, you know, and it's like, well, wait a minute.
Right.
Really? You're just going to try it? You know, and so I wanted to do well, you know, and finish well and feel good and have a good experience. And so I built up to that. And I think that's, you and I share those kind of similar personality traits. Whereas some people are just, like I said, I personally, this is just observation. They see other people doing it, friends, and it's like, well, I'm going to give that a shot too. You know,
right.
I want to be known as a buckler.
Right. And then, like I said, wear the jacket, you know, the shirt to pick up your kids and,
yeah.
You know,
you did the Leadville 100? Yeah, I did. It took me 30 hours, but I did it.
Right. And I think that you're going to see some of these, you know, some of these issues coming to bear shortly as we, you know, we talked about and as, you know, the paper I sent to you that I've written up on the demographics of ultra running, the growth of the sport. And I don't know if you were surprised in reading the draft of the paper I sent you, but I was kind of shocked at some of the numbers of that growth. I mean, it was pretty remarkable to see how big the sport has become in a relatively short period of time. And I'm just going to read really quick. Just for instance, just even at the marathon distance, a study by active.com from 2008 to 2010 found a 203% increase in marathon race participation.
Yeah.
203%. Right?
Yeah.
That's mind-boggling how many more people are getting involved in this.
You know, I think the big boom of the marathon was closer to like the early 2000s too. You know, like I remember in 2003 I saw a similar stat to that, and I think it was like 200% growth over the last couple of years. So it's been growing like that year after year after year. So it is surprising, actually. It seems like it would level off at the marathon distance a little bit.
And I'm trying to pull up. Oh, here we go. It's another study. 1996, there were 17 trail 100 milers in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
In 2008, there were 59.
Yeah. And there's like just in the United States alone right
just
now.
Just in the United States.
There's right now, there's like 111, according to Stan Jensen's site, the run100s.com. There's 111 100 milers in the country. And most of them do really well in terms of participation.
Yeah. And we had, you know, at the TARC, we had per 100 mile or per 100 mile participants, 119 entrants.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 192. 192 entrants with 156 starters.
Yeah.
We had 164 entrants for the 50 with 113 starters. That's not a small event.
No.
In terms of sheer numbers. And this is just a very low-key event in Weston, Massachusetts, without and you know, first year event having 192 entrants for the 100?
Yeah. I know, it's amazing.
I think it's just mind blowing. And you know, again, it's borne out in the amount of, you know, in the shoe market. It's borne out in the advertising. It's borne out, as you said, in the social media sites. It's borne out in the size of the running clubs. And if the 100 mile distance doesn't continue to grow, and I think we can discuss whether it's kind of reaching that plateau point, trail running is absolutely going to continue to grow.
Yeah.
I think there's no doubt, and I think the 50-mile distance is kind of that sweet spot distance that's going to attract a lot of people because it's long enough to be terribly impressive. It's double a marathon almost,
yeah.
But it's not so long as to completely be debilitating,
yeah.
You know, and to think about, you know, I'm going to be running for 28 hours now.
Yeah.
The last finisher for the 50 was 16 hours.
Ugh.
It's still an hour faster than the last finisher for an Ironman, because an Ironman cutoff is 17 hours.
Yeah.
So odds are your time at a 50 miler, are going to be faster than how much time it's going to spend you to do an Ironman. And you see the Ironman numbers.
Yeah.
And so that 50 mile distance, I could see growing quite a bit.
Yeah. Getting done within a day kind of thing, I think, is important. When things start to last into the next morning, then it's like, I don't know about this race anymore.
Exactly.
It's a little more palatable. Not only that, but the lead up to it too, the training involved and the impact on your family and things like that and your life in general. Training for a 50 miler is a bit easier, I think, than 100.
And I think training for a 50 is a bit easier than training for an Ironman.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with all the gear and, you know, having to, you know, disperse your time and training over three different events, it's, you know, takes...
The cost is far less. The time to train is actually going to be less. And the convenience of training is going to be far less. And the, you know, potential impact on, you know, the family is probably going to be a bit less. And the cost is quite a bit less. You figure for an Ironman, it might cost $700 to enter. For the TARC 50 miler, it costs $60.
Yeah.
And there's an old 50 mile race here in New England called Stonecat. And this is the first year it's actually going to a lottery entry.
Yeah, wow.
And so if people want to look for the trajectory of ultra running, I think it's really going to be around that 50 mile distance is where you're going to see the explosion happen.
Yeah. Yeah, just looking at the numbers for hundreds too, you know, I have a feeling that, like I was kind of telling you, it's going to be like a wave of people trying the hundreds and then possibly like receding or ebbing back to shorter distances like the 50.
Yep.
You know, it's just that I see all these people getting fired up about the 100 and it's like, you know, it's typical American mentality. Let's push the envelope and see what we can do. And, you know, it's never enough kind of thing.
Yeah, I think there's that. I think there's going to be a trend. I don't have the data on this, but just my impression of being at the TARC 100 race, it's going to start trending younger a little bit. I mean, again, the data of finishers from 100 mile races that I pulled for the research paper, generally the biggest demographic age group is 40 to 44.
Mm-hmm.
And in my survey, the biggest age category of respondents was 35 to 44. So we're talking about, you know, late 30s, early 40s, you know, late 40s, kind of a sweet spot. But I saw a lot of younger people there in their 20s and, you know, in their 20s and early 30s. And so I think you're going to be starting to see more people younger as well get involved in this, where right now it's been more of an older person activity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I say older person, including myself in that category as a 43-year-old. You know, and I wonder to the extent that you're going to start to see that start to skew to a younger demographic a little bit.
Yeah, I think in that regard, and going back to the 100 again, only just speaking for that distance, I think with the younger folks getting more involved in it. And I think we're going to see, like we have already, the speeds are going to come up and the, you know, course records are going to be broken. But on the flip side of that, we're also going to see drop numbers increasing.
And I agree.
Finisher rates not being as high as they have been because, you know, like we just got done talking about, people are just going to jump into it. And, you know, when you have that influx, it's the quality at the front goes up, you know, the speed, but also you're going to have a lot of fallout of, you know, people not finishing these things just because they're not really ready for them, I guess.
I think that physiologically speaking, I know physiologically speaking, there's a reason why as older people tend to be better endurance athletes. That's because the years of endurance training actually physiologically develops the pathways of delivering oxygen to the muscles, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you do have this effect of the longer you train endurance, if you're training smart, the better you're going to be. And so you can have a longer career. This is why as runners, you know, get older, as you know, I'm talking about the track and 10K guys and women, they start to go the marathon because they can still be competitive at the marathon level, you know, at a later age versus a 5K and 10K area. That said, if you're 23, 24, you might not have that base, that endurance base to then do that, you know, to be as successful as at the longer distances. So I think you're right. I think you're going to see a higher dropout rate. You're going to see people coming in and not necessarily being prepared because of their lack of experience at endurance events physically and also mentally. And I just got to say that without being cocky, I never once doubted I would finish.
Yeah.
Not because I'm such a great athlete, but because I've done endurance events before. Mm. I knew when I hit a low point, I knew it was a low point. I didn't, you know, over dramatize it. You know, my fueling plan kind of went to hell because I just didn't want to eat what I had with me. And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to flip it and I'm going to, you know, do other, you know, I hit an aid station. I'd, you know, pound some ginger ale. I'd grab a Fig Newton or something and I'd go. I kind of knew what to expect, mm-hmm. and I was able to roll with it. I was able to kind of be able to deal with whatever was happening because I've had that experience before.
Yeah.
When you don't have that experience, that stuff can take on a more dire consequence.
Yeah. And I mean, I've said in a previous show that, you know, anybody can do 100 and they're honestly not that hard to finish them. And people are like, well, what are you talking about? But physically, you can basically walk in 100-mile race and finish it. But like you just brought up, it's the mental aspect of it is I think what breaks people down. And I read a lot of the people you talked about, you know, from the TARC race who dropped, and a lot of them were just like, gosh, just the conditions are so hard, and you know, it's the mud got to me, and it was like just walking through mud. I mean, all you had to do is, I mean, to like that one person finishing in 16 hours.
Yeah,
it's like walking, you know, very slow, like just almost not even 2.5 miles per hour. So
yeah,
it can be done. You just have to push through it. But yeah, let's move on to why people, like we were talking about, why people get into these and why they, you know, are interested in doing ultra endurance events or ultra running specifically. But two things. One that I saw in your report or the demographics were that it was, they view the sport as, or there's the idea of the sport as being an oddity and being like different than everybody else. If you go and do this, it's not part of mainstream, but it is, you know, moving towards that now. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, it's becoming to the point where you could probably bump into somebody who's, you know, run a 50 or 100.
Yeah. One of the things I think is happening is, the, you know, for those of us who are old enough to have seen The Wizard of Oz, the curtain's been pulled back, okay? And, you know, if you ever watched the movie The Wizard of Oz, there's that moment where they see, you know, there's this big booming scary voice and everyone's frightened of the Wizard of Oz and how, you know, magical and powerful the Great Oz is. And then they pull the curtain back and it's this little old guy.
Yeah.
And they're not even scared of him anymore. They're like, oh, that's it? And I think when you see all these people able to do it, okay, able to complete a 50 or 100 or, you know, whatever ultra distance you want to count, the mystical aspect, the intimidating aspect of it gets reduced a little bit. And so people are looking at it now. I know I, you know, looked at it this way and say, well, hell, if all these people, all these other people can do it, I know I can. And that is part of the social media aspect of it, where the awareness of the possibility of completion increases, the belief in self of completing it increases, and also the accolades. But I think that people just don't see it as being that big of a deal in terms of, I could never do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I first got into ultras, it was, you know, way, way back, like 2007. And, I was in North Carolina at the time, and it wasn't the group that, you know, I ran with and knew, in Charlotte, North Carolina at that point. Ultra running was not that big at all. I mean, I was like one of the very few. I mean, we're talking like not even a handful of people that did it in that area. You know, and they had races and stuff, but, you know, like in Raleigh or whatever. But in my specific, like, little culture of runners in Charlotte, I was like the weirdo. You know, it's like, God, he's an ultra. He runs those distances. You know, and we're talking, you know, 6 years ago.
It's right.
Not that long ago. And yet now it's I look and there's like a Charlotte 50K, you know, and it's like all these people that probably thought I was nuts back then for running a whole 31-mile race. You know, now they're all like participating and putting them on and stuff like that. So it's gone from that, you know, an oddity to, hey, it's, you know, it's pretty common now. Yeah, I remember back when I was training, riding bikes all the time, like in 1992, 93 in Michigan, near Michigan State University, where I went to school, and I was riding with my buddy Franz, who worked at the cyclotron there. And cyclotron is where, you know, they do fancy stuff like physics stuff. And there was another physicist there who we would see out on these farm roads, I mean, miles and miles away from the school. And I would see him running, you know, this, like, he was in his 50s. The beard, I mean, he looked like typical ultra runner, you know, guy. And
right.
I had no idea that people ran further than a marathon. And
right.
I was like, Franz said, oh, that's Ed. You know, I work with that guy. He runs hundreds. And I'm like, hundreds what? 100 meters? What? And he's like, no, 100 miles. He comes out here and runs in the farmlands and for, you know, like 7 hours at a time. And I was dumbfounded. You know, it was like, that was my first introduction to the sport.
Yeah, so I think we have, you know, people who are doing ultras are increasingly just kind of breaking all the rules of what we think is possible. And so we've talked about before how traditionally people would do two marathons a year, and that was it. And now ultra runners are doing 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 events a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of me sits there and wants to say to them, don't you know you can't do that? You're not supposed to be able to do that. They're doing it, right? Mm. And we can debate whether or not they're doing it fast or well or et cetera, but they're doing it. And so the idea of what's possible and what's doable is being challenged by people who, and in some respects, don't know any better.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's kind of ignorance is bliss kind of aspect of thinking, well, I see all these people doing it, so therefore I must be able to do it too, so I'm just going to go do it. And I want to sit there and say, no, you can't. You have to do a marathon first. You have to do, you know, years of training to get to this point. And then they go out there and they do it. And I kind of go, okay, I guess you can do it. And yeah. It's just breaking the rules. I think as more of these rules are broken, you're going to have more people involved. And I do think that there's an ego gratification aspect to it for sure. If, you know, I did this thing, look at me, you know, which I think is deserved, right, to some point, you know, and that – they can show, you know, they can show others that I did this extraordinary thing that increasingly is becoming not easy, but less extraordinary. It's becoming more ordinary. I mean, we can talk about when the extraordinary becomes ordinary. Yeah. Every weekend, almost every weekend, you could find an ultra.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just in reading, you know, Dean Karnazes gets smashed by people a lot for, you know, kind of his circus like, you know, way of going about ultra running. I mean, he went from being a pretty legitimate ultra runner and then, you know, started doing crazy things, you know, and writing about them and his, you know, his 50 marathons in 50 days and 50 states or whatever, which, side note, I mean, he wasn't the first that did it. Sam Thompson actually did it the year before. But when he did that, people were like, oh my God, how is that even possible? You know, I remember when he rolled through North Carolina at the time back in, I don't remember when it was, 2005. And when he was doing that thing, and it was like, you know, he was like a celebrity, but it was like, you know, kind of that weird, like, you know, bearded lady celebrity type thing.
Right.
You know,
freak
like,
show.
Yeah. It's like, check him out, man. Look at how ripped down he is. That's crazy. The guy just ran like 40 marathons and, you know, doing 50s and 100s and things like that, and running, you know, in the desert and what, I mean, all the weird stuff that he wants to do. You know, back then it was like that shock, you know, it was like watching Psycho in the 50s. It was the scariest movie on the face of the earth. And,
right.
You know, now it's like you just go to a movie and watch someone get their head chopped off with a chainsaw, and it's like, yeah, it's part of it, no big deal. You know, and it's like you said, it's just, it's becoming more mainstream, but, you know, that there's still that drive of people wanting to do something that's kind of weird, I think, to their friend. Like when they go to their kids' soccer games, it's like, I ran a 50K, you know, over the weekend. It's like, oh my God, really? You know, they love that.
And so we're becoming desensitized to the extraordinariness of it. It's becoming more ordinary, which makes it more seemingly doable. It's becoming less intimidating. At the same time, it's still impressive enough to others who don't know any better to provide this kind of self-gratification of you know, and elevated sense of self, right? Mm. It provides this sense of community and belonging. At the same time that we experience of going out there and having everyone pat you on the back and you pat them on the back, and we're all, you know, hail fellow well met and everything's great. And, you know, that's one of the things I was thinking as I was at the TARC race. I'm thinking, God, Tim would really hate this.
Why would I hate that?
Because there were no winners. There wasn't necessarily competitive. I mean, the guy who won the 50, Anthony. Let me pull up Anthony's last name real quick.
Starts with a P, I think.
Perillo.
Yeah.
He's fast. He won 100 this year.
Yeah.
And the guy who came in second, Brian Oestreich, he's actually doing Lead Man. I mean, so it was, I won't say it wasn't competitive at the front. They were running competitively.
Yeah.
But for the most part, this was not a competitive event. No one, you know, people weren't trying to beat each other except for that guy behind me. Who with a headlamp, I would, you know,
yeah,
there was no way in hell he was passing me. It was a very much of a old school community. Everyone's a winner. You're all great kind of aspect. And that's why I was thinking, God, Tim would really hate this.
No, don't say that. That's just, it's a topic that I like to talk about. That, you know, it's some of the structure and it would be nice to be there. I mean, reading it, you know, of course it's the topic of pacing comes up all, and like you could bring up, like, talk about dandelions, and all of a sudden, like, the comment stream would turn to pacing and how good or bad it is and people's opinions. And, you know, I was reading Iron Farr's, like, preview of the women's race, and some, you know, goofball, of course, has to bring up the term, they should give a second award for if you run it solo. And it's
right.
Like, what? Just shut up. Go away. You know, because that's not even what we're talking about here. And, you know, and honestly, it's like, if there were like an overall sanctioning body that said, you know, pacing at our sanctioned races is not accepted or accepted, then there'd be no discussion about it. You know, it'd just be like, yeah, that's part of the race, you know, but that's my problem with, like, you know, the lack of structure, or, you know, the lack of competition, which I don't think your race had lack of competition. I think
no.
Every individual in there, even the 16-hour finisher, felt that he was, you know, competing in an event, you know, and he may have, you know, been more of a life or death, got to get across the finish line kind of motivation. But, you know, not to mention that he missed the cutoff by, like, what, 4 hours, you know?
Yeah, she.
That's what blows my mind is they stopped the dude who was running 95 miles and didn't let him slip through, and yet I read the results, and you don't get official results past the cutoff, and yet I think it was, like, 40 people or something like that.
For the 50?
I think so.
41. Well, let me revise my numbers. I said 54 beat the 12-hour cutoff. Only 41 did.
Yeah.
There was an additional 13 who finished within 12 hours, but, you know, they're like 12:05 or 12:37.
Yeah. So I think there's like 22 or something that finished outside of the official race.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yet they still, hey, here's your finish. Here's your, you know, it's like a kid's birthday party. Everybody goes home with a balloon, you know.
Well, the thing was that the last place, the person who finished in 16 hours got the same thing at the finish line that I got, which was absolutely nothing. Well, I got a couple grilled cheese sandwich pieces and some aid table stuff. You know, that's exactly what we all got. So, yeah, good on us. So, I mean – Do I care that do I want to sit there and email the race directors and say, look, you said it was a 12-hour cutoff, damn it, and there were these many people, and you got to stick to your word? I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter to me. If a person wants to be out there schlepping around in the mud for 16 hours or 50 miles, God bless you.
Yeah, I'm composing that email as we speak.
I figured you would. No, I'm serious. I'm thinking also, God, Tim would be really upset at this.
Excuse me, sir. I live across the country, but I just happened to be on Ultra Sign Up and I saw the results.
I'm going to start a thread on letsrun.com.
Yeah, exactly.
about the injustice of the TARC 150 miler and how my finish was devalued. By the fact that these people who did not make the 12-hour cutoff are nevertheless listed on the same spreadsheet as me?
Not even me, but my friend race was devalued.
Yeah, I feel completely devalued as a person because I adhered to the rules and I followed what the rules were meant to be. And, you know, they got the same thing as I did. That's just not right.
Yeah, I want I want their grilled cheese sandwich myself. I don't
exactly. I mean, why should they get the same thing as me when I was clearly a better person than they are?
You know what you should have done, Gary, is bought like 10 or 15 of those 100-mile buckles and carry them around with you.
What I asked the race director Bob Crowley, if I could do this was a while back. I said if I could take the belt buckle with the TARC 100 and then just get engraved on it divided by 2. And
wear it around.
Yeah, you know,
if I could get that
and just kind of wear that around and get that in the back of my car.
That's
and
sweet.
Now the answer was no. But I think that the going back to why Tim hates community events, I think that. I think that this sense of we're all kind of hanging out doing our thing together and look at us, we're crazy knuckleheads. And one of the questions going back to the survey again was, ultra runners are a different kind of person. And there was a lot of agreement with that kind of statement. And one of the reasons I asked that question was to gauge the extent to which people see themselves as different.
As individuals, yeah. Isn't that the funniest thing? It's like I'm unique because I do this.
Ultra runners, we
all wear the exact same thing, and I buy all the stuff that you're buying, and I'm signing up for the race to be with you. And it's like, no, you're not that unique. You know,
we asked the question: ultra runners are a different breed of person, and 4.58 on a one to be strongly disagree, five being strongly agree, or I'm sorry, six being strongly agree, 4.58. So there's pretty strong agreement with that. Ultra runners are a different breed of person, and so you know what the thing starts to become: maybe you're not.
Yeah.
Or maybe because more and more people are doing it, maybe it's not really a different breed of person. Maybe it's we're just like everyone else. And I guess I can say we now because when I did a couple of 50Ks, I didn't see myself as really being that much of an ultra runner, quote unquote. Now that I've run all night long and ankle deep mud,
I
feel more like an ultra runner. Although that as we talk about that finisher list, it's starting to actually irritate me a little bit. I think on the TARC 100 Facebook site, as everyone's talking about, you're all winners. I need to actually start a thread about.
No, they're not.
I have a question. I have a clarification question here. I thought that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but rule number 1.387.5 clearly states.
Yeah.
That well, you will not, you know,
along
you,
along with that thread too, Gary, you got to like just inject a little comment about did the top three guys get drug tested? By the way,
I actually with the way they started this race, I'd absolutely want them drug tested. Yeah. And as I mentioned to you, Anthony was wearing all Salomon gear, so I mean I can't compete with that.
Oh my gosh,
he had a matching Salomon tights and top.
Yeah,
and you know
his outfit costs more than my car.
Yeah, what am I going to do? I can't run against that.
No. It's like the American Zoffagen race. I mean, that dude who won had nipple earrings.
Had nipple earrings. I can't compete.
No, you can't run against that.
But back when my tattoos were edgy – I could. Now everyone's got a damn tattoo. I mean, I do. I keep trying to do all these things that make me unique, and damned if all these people don't take it away from me. I want my uniqueness, damn it.
There's, you know what? Actually, there's a 1,000-mile race in Silverton, Colorado. If you want to go there and do that, I'm sure no one's finished it yet. And if you finish, well, I think you get some money, but it takes like 40 days, I think, to finish.
I know we have Western States coming up, and that's the big buzz about who's going to do, you know, who's going to win Western States. But I wanted to ask you who's going to win the Self-Transcendence 3,100-mile race.
I know you sent that link to me, and I was, that's why I didn't even respond. I'm like, is he serious? You're like, who's your favorite in this race? I'm like, who the hell cares? You know, it's like 3,100-mile race.
Yeah, for those who don't know, for those who want to know, you know, for those who are looking for their uniqueness, you know, where's my uniqueness? You missed the start, which was on June 16th.
Darn.
And it goes to August 7th. called the Mount Everest of ultramarathons by the New York Times. It's the longest certified foot race in the world in New York. And it goes around a track that I believe is a 0.5488 mile course.
Oh my God.
Around a city block in Queens.
6,200 times around that thing?
I guess. So it's 5,649 laps.
Oh my God. It's like, hey, what did you do last summer? I ran a race. No, what'd you do the rest of the summer? I ran a race. Really? Yeah, you want to be unique and weird. Go do that.
And you can track people's daily results. And I'm far less impressed with Western States 100 at this point.
Yeah.
I'm far more impressed with the Self-Transcendence 3,100-mile race that's taking place right now. So who's the woman's favorite for that one?
Who?
I don't know.
Yeah, me either. I didn't even open the link. I just I saw what it was, and I'm like, I just say you can't even be serious. yeah, which brings us to another reason why people say in your survey why they enjoy doing this or why they get into it, and they say it's like the personal challenge or the, you know, like we already touched on, the individuality of it, the uniqueness, you know, the solitude, stuff like that, getting out in nature. And yet it's like it's so ego driven, you know, just because, you know, on my Twitter account, I read the feeds and it's like, last week I did 120 miles, 20,000 feet of climb. And it's like, who cares? You know, why is this why you do it? Just so you can tell us what you're doing, you know? And it's like my post yesterday, hey, double crossing a whole pass. Look how cool I am. You know, is that the only reason you went out and did that? You know, no, but I'm writing about it because I don't have anything else to write about. But, you know, it's such an ego-driven and social sport that it's becoming, where Ed, running out in Michigan, he didn't care if his wife knew what he was doing out there, you
right.
know? Nowadays, it's like, hey, I just did a 4-mile run this morning. Check it out, you know? And it's like they have to share all this stuff, and that's part of the sport now. And so it's not such a personal challenge or an individual aspect to it. It's a much more social sport.
Yep. Absolutely. And I about your post yesterday, I was kind of surprised you didn't say, you know,
I'm
brought
cool.
to you brought no brought to you by VI Fuel.
Yeah. it's V Fuel now.
V Fuel.
If you're gonna face me and use that stuff, you better get it straight. Yeah, they had to change it. I think there was some idiot like in Europe or whatever was like, hey, my company that makes cufflinks is called V, you know? So they had to change it to V Fuel, which is a much cooler logo in my opinion anyway.
Yeah, and this goes back to why NASCAR drivers are better than ultra runners, because, you know, and I do think there needs to be some media training for ultra runners, because rarely would you, you know, see an ultra runner thank the guys back in the engine shop or their sponsors.
Yeah, I do all the time. You know, I try to anyway, and it's not. It's difficult, you know, because I don't want to sound like Jeff Rose wrote a piece back when, you know, he was starting to falter a little bit in hundreds or, you know, in racing in general. And he wrote a piece on Drymax socks, how much he liked them. And that generated an article that Matt wrote, you know, a really good article on about Jeff Rose and competitiveness and things like that. I don't want to sound like that, you know, where I'm trying to like sell something, but a lot of the stuff that, you know, I am so grateful because I know I'm just a mediocre schmuck running these races and, you know, it's, I'm grateful for these folks to support me. I don't want to sound like I'm just saying stuff, but I used this stuff long before they gave it to me free, you know, or supported me in any way. I mean, I've been using La Sportiva shoes for years. And have always, I've written several reviews on them, some good, some not so good, you know, on certain shoes. It's difficult because I always feel a little bit cheesy. It's like, hey, yeah, I had 35 gels during the 100-mile race, and they were delicious, every one of them. You know,
well, since we're whoring ourselves out for financial gain, and since you pay me nothing, although I do appreciate the 6 V-Fuel gels you sent to me, it was a great retainer.
Hey, they weigh a ton, man. You know how much that postage was?
If it wasn't for my Phoenix, or I don't know if you pronounce it Phoenix or Phoenix flashlight,
yeah,
that thing is, outside of buying my wife an engagement ring, it was the best purchase I ever made in my life. And I got to tell you, the engagement ring, was probably less expensive than the flashlight. You know, the flashlight cost me like $85 for this little handheld flashlight. Mm. Oh my God! If anybody out there wants to run at night,
yeah,
right. Check this thing out. I don't have the it's the one that has 740 lumens, which is slightly below, you know, a spotlight that, you know, shoots out into, you know, a quasar, you know, 10,000 light years away. This thing was amazing. And if anybody out there, I'm sure, I don't know if the tens of listeners that you have, if any of them work for that company, but, you know, if you do, you know, call me.
Yeah, give me one.
Let's talk, because that thing was phenomenal. Just amazing.
Did you have ships run aground and out in the Atlantic and Boston Harbor because they were like honing in on your beam? I mean, that thing is so bright.
Well, quite seriously, and I only had it like on the second highest setting. I went to a few aid stations and I was trying to like fill up my bottle. I ended up flashing a couple of the aid station workers in the eyes, and I think they had retinal damage. it was phenomenal. It was just amazing. And you know, so shout out to that company and that flashlight, man. Holy cow, was that thing amazing.
Speaking of which, I haven't written about it yet. I mean, I need to, but I have the Petzl Now, NAO, and it's their new light that's actually – it registers what you're looking at and adjusts its brightness based on how close or far you're looking. It's amazing.
I saw a couple of those guys wearing those. I didn't know what it was.
So sweet. It's not like you have to wait like even a second. It's, you hold up like a piece of paper like you're looking at a map or something, and it gets like really dim, just enough for you to read. And then you look out into, you know, onto the trail, far down the trail, and it's like high beam 300 lumens. And it's kick ass. I used it all night because I was so slow at Zion, and the battery lasted. It's got its own self-charging battery. Pretty cool. And it's an amazing light. You'll get to see it firsthand at Leadville. Well, hopefully not for long, because we'll be finishing by dinner time.
Quick question for you. As we kind of wrap things up, I know, not who do you think is going to win Western States for the men and women, but who do you want to see win? Who would you like to see win?
I want Robert Krar to win, and I think he's going to win.
Okay.
For the men. And for the women, Rory Bazio is my pick. I was going to go with Cassie Scallon, but just like I wrote on Irene Farr's comments today, if she has a coach, she got to fire him, because having her run that Cayuga 50 miler and ended up, you know, falling and hurting her hamstring or whatever, just lining up for that thing, it just makes me question, you know, the common sense in it. But whatever, you know, we all race for different reasons.
Why do you want to see Rob Krar win?
Because he was on our show.
There you go.
Yeah, and I can't get anybody else on the show. So, no.
Thanks. That makes me feel a lot better about my uniqueness now.
Well, you don't even care if people like go over the cutoffs. God,
I know.
You know, you're nobody. Just kidding. I'll say that after Leadville. Obviously I had Dylan Bowman on the show too, and I really have always admired him, and he's a phenomenal runner. I wouldn't mind seeing him win it. But Rob Krar is just, he kind of embodies what I appreciate in like competition, you know, in running. He's not he's the guy that sits off in the corner and tries not to draw attention to himself. No blog, right. No Twitter. Well, he does have Twitter, but he doesn't tweet his like daily workouts. But he, you know, Facebook stuff. It's just like the guy is like focused on racing, and he is competitive and driven, and just a very humble, nice guy. And I'd love to see him win it. And I think he's got a great shot. And Rory, the same way. I think I met Rory. She almost ran me down at the Fire Trails 50-miler when she won it that year. She, I think I beat her by like a minute, and I almost had a heart attack trying to get across the line before her. But I met her there a few years ago, like 2009. And I think that was like her first ultra, and she did really well there. And I just was like, this girl is young and fast, and you know, if she sticks with this sport, she's going to do really well. So I've kind of watched her over the last 3 years. Get better and better at Western States. You know, last year she was second, and so I'd like to see her take it this year. I think she's earned it.
Nice.
Yeah. Who do you want?
I don't know. I mean, you follow these things a lot closer than I do. I'm just looking at the list right now, and for no particular reason, I'm looking at Nick Clark because I don't know. He's just kind of like a guy who just kind of hangs around. Obviously he wins races, but he's kind of there. But you don't hear much about him.
No,
right?
He is probably one of the hardest working ultra runners, I would say. I'll tell you what, there's nobody that I would want to race against in the last mile of a 100 miler. That dude would, you know, run on bloody stumps if it came down to it. So, yeah, I'd like to see him win it too, I guess.
You know, he's just quiet. I mean, I don't know him, obviously. I don't know if he's quiet or not. It might be, he might be, the one loud Brit that, you find. But he's just always there. He's always there, but just doesn't in the big race like this, getting the break to win would just be really cool to see. You know, I know he's won some big races. Like I'm looking at his results, Speed Goat 50K, he won or whatever. But, Hard Rock 100, he came in third. Western States 100, third. Mm-hmm. He's just kind of like always – American River 50, third. He's always kind of there. You kind of want to just
look at his times at Western States. I think it was like 1540, 1550. I mean, it's crazy fast. So he's obviously got the speed, and if it shakes out this year where it's, it's supposed to be pretty warm, like a typical year, unlike last year, who knows, with the carnage up front, he could manage a good race and put it together.
Yeah, so I don't know. Should be interesting to follow this coming up weekend, yeah?
Yeah. No, not this weekend.
Next weekend.
Yeah.
Next weekend.
Yeah, I'll be busy racing myself. I know everybody will be following that instead, my race.
Well, that's what you do is race.
Yeah, that's my living.
It's your thing.
Yeah. What do you have coming up next racing-wise?
I don't have a dang thing right now. I might do a marathon in July up in Vermont, try to get a Boston qualifier, which would require 3:15. I don't have much. I mean, I actually haven't run this week or biked this week yet. I'm thinking about doing it today. I kind of want to get back out there. The recovery has gone pretty well. The feet aren't shrapnel, so that's good. My legs feel fine now. Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer in recovery. And by that, I mean, sit on your butt and don't do anything for a few days.
Yeah.
Just to let all the micro tears heal and let the body get back to normal. And I'm just enjoying not having anything on schedule right now.
You do have something on the schedule in like 8 weeks. So I would suggest. Yeah. How far are you going to pace me anyway? What are you thinking? You're going to do like 5 miles?
Well, I was thinking about what my next challenge would be. I imagine at the time I pick you up, things are going to be, heading so far downhill that I'm just going to be kind of like that guy behind the cavalry with the broom sweeping things up.
I'll have you know that I ran on fire in 2011 for the last 10 miles. I mean, I was busting out. I think I ran the last half marathon from May Queen to the finish in 2:45.
Nice.
Yeah. So if you can do a 2:45 half marathon, you can hang with me.
Well, if I can do a 2:45 half marathon at altitude's the question. That's one of the things that's kind of worrying me about being able to actually support you in a meaningful way is just the fact that you live at 8,000 feet and I live at 200.
Yeah.
And so hopefully coming out there for a week ahead of time is going to get me in the place I need to be to at least not completely fall apart. By the way, the guy who won the 50 miler at the TARC 100, I was chatting with him afterwards, and he said that he did Leadville 1 year in 29:30.
Yeah.
Because of the altitude. He just did not acclimatize. He went out there and just got trounced.
Crushes people. Yeah.
Right.
It's not just going over Hope Pass. That's actually not even a big deal because you're up and down it so quick. I mean, it's like 15 minutes at 12,600 feet, unless you want to hang out up there, which is ridiculous. But yeah, people get slammed. It's, you know, the average altitude, you start at 10,000 feet, you know, so it's like you're there all day long, baby. So if you're like a sea level or whatever, it's have fun.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why I'm coming out for a week ahead of time to try to get myself straight.
Yeah. When are you coming out? What day?
I think on a Wednesday.
Wednesday before the race, so
Wednesday after the race. Yeah, Wednesday before the race.
Well, you could have said a week before. Wednesday cool
before the race.
Like 10 days, that'd be sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, good. So we'll get a couple of jogs in before the race anyway.
Yeah, and then I gotta get my mountain bike out. That's one of the things I'm looking forward to doing now is getting some mountain biking in. And that was your gratuitous Foot Feathers podcast mountain bike mention of the day. So I'm looking forward to doing that and just kind of, you know, whatever. I got a 50K coming up in October. I got cyclocross season coming up in August.
Yeah.
So sweet. Pretty soon I'm going to have to start switching over from aerobic efforts for, you know, 5 hours plus to anaerobic efforts for 45 minutes.
Yeah. I'm signed up. I just signed up for my first cyclocross race. I'm going to do it on my 1989 Bianchi mint colored bike. It's really kind of going to be cool. People will be impressed.
And by the way, I got some thanks for people who at the TARC 100 who came up to me and said they liked the podcast. That was cool. Very nice to hear compliments of me being on. So glad.
Yeah, it's really odd. I get compliments all the time about you being on too. It's I don't seem to get any for myself putting them on. But hey, as long as they like you, it's fine.
Yeah, well,
jerk.
So, right.
Whatever.
Until they get to know me.
Yeah. Exactly. once again, thanks for being on the show today. Appreciate it. And we left a lot on the table that we can talk about, in the future as we kind of pick through the paper that you've written, the conclusions from the survey. So we'll have you back on as soon as possible.
I'd love to. And just as another thing, it's in the works, working with Cayuga 50 to do an economic impact survey of their race to see what does ultra running contribute to local economies, if anything, especially these travel races. And we're going to be working with the Vermont 100 to do the same kind of survey. And mention if anybody out there who's listening, the tens of listeners out there, want to, if you're a race director and want to kind of see what impact your race is having to show the local communities that you're contributing something meaningful other than, you know, ruining the trails for a day.
Yeah.
By all means, you know, reach out to me and I will be happy to talk with you about setting up a survey for our academic research on the economic contributions of ultra running to local economies.
Yeah, that'd be a fun show to have. And especially I think we'll wait until after Leadville, which is not that far off. It's only like 8 weeks, but
right.
That is, I know you've been there last year, but this year we'll get to go a couple days early and hang out, and you'll get to see, you know, the influx of the runners there. And it's, you know, that you've got not only the 1,200 runners, but their families and stuff and crews. And, you know, you'll get to see the impact on a small mining town, which was the whole point when Ken put the race together. And the impact is amazing, you know, negative and positive. People are like, yeah, I don't really appreciate ultra runners like shitting in my yard right before the start. However, I love you guys coming in and spending hundreds of dollars, you know.
And so I would love to see it. I don't know if they've taught, you know, I know they've done some survey, but I would love to do the survey for Leadville because that would just be fascinating to see the impact of that race, you know.
Yeah. Oh, it's got to be just amazing. I mean,
it's got to be phenomenal.
We'll hook that up. We'll hook that up this year. And next year you can do maybe we can talk to him beforehand, but we'll get that rolling.
Right on.
All right. Thanks again, Gary. Have a good day and a good rest of your week. And as always, folks, thanks for listening to Elevation Trail and the Foot Feather Show with me, Foot Feather Tim Long, and Gary David here today. We appreciate you. Please feel free to leave us some comments, ask Gary some questions, tell him how great he is on the show, whatever. And as always, have fun out there on the trails.
I'm the dandy highwayman, so sick of easy fashion. The clumsy